and welcome to Worlds Apart. In geopolitics, more than in any other area of human activity, friendship and enmity come at a price. That's particularly true about the relationship between great powers, which now reached a new inflection point with the potential for mutual cooperation and mutual destruction being roughly equal. Which way are the scales of history likely to tip? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Gulshan Sachdeva, a professor at the Jawaharlal Nehru University in New Delhi. Professor, it's great to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Now, most geopolitical discussions these days are colored by the events in the United States and the inauguration of Donald Trump. And given their dramatic or at times erratic nature, I think it gives many other nations an opportunity to have a sober look at their policies and decide which way they want to go, perhaps towards more self-grounding, deciding which relationship they want to keep, which relationship they want to change. And I want to look at India's policy from that perspective. Let's start at a potential for change. I know that the relationship between India and China has long been rather testy, but over the last couple of months, there have been notable signs of warming up. Are you more hopeful or skeptical about these two large nations developing a somewhat more harmonious way of relating?
How to deal with China, a rising China, assertive China, is a major challenge for all countries.
Also rising and assertive India.
Well, India is not assertive, but India is definitely rising. So this has been a challenge for India. And this is also a good opportunity because, you know, these two economies are large economies next to each other, growing very fast. So they can also feed each other. Now, despite all the challenges, all the problem which India in the last few years had with China, still last year, China was India's number one trading partner. And for the last 15 years, 20 years, China has been India's one of the top trading partners. So there has also been a long disputed border. So for the last few years, things have deteriorated. But now, as you have rightly mentioned, in the last few years, last few months, there has been certain positive developments. In fact, as we speak, India's foreign secretary is visiting China. So there has been, cautiously, I would say one is optimistic that things would come to some kind of normalcy, where we know that the border issue will take long time to be resolved, but it can be resolved by talking. So one can only hope that now things would be more or less in a situation where you have certain issues to be resolved, but at the same time, you can start working as a good neighbors, you know, working on many of those issues, because China can also provide many opportunities to India.
I heard experts say that the China-India relationship since the Cold War has followed this thaw-provoke-repeat pattern, when there would be some positive steps and then they would invariably be negated by some dispute later on. Do you think these recent positive moves are still within that cycle, or they have some potential of breaking through it?
No, I would think that, you know, since it has been now decided at the top level that we have to find certain solution to the problem. I think they have thought through this process, because both countries are, they have mature leadership. So despite all the problems we had, I mean, still, I think they both are quite cautious in that time that it should not go out of control and others should not take advantage of the problems between India and China. So I think I'm optimistic that hopefully we'll see some positive developments.
Now, you mentioned some talks at the top level, and of course there was a major meeting between Prime Minister Modi and President Xi, which took place here in Russia. I wonder, though, if you take this positive development as a thing in its own, driven by its own dynamic, or is it more an influence of global events, for example, a response to what's going on across the ocean in the United States?
No, I think it's a combination of all factors. because things cannot happen in isolation. What is happening in Europe, what is happening in United States, what is happening in Asia, and you have to look at all those issues carefully, and then you have to calculate. There is uncertainty, as you said, in United States. Under Trump, it's unpredictable how he is going to react. At the same time, there are serious issues at the global level. You have many conflicts. As we have seen, the global institutions of governance, whether you look at the United Nations Security Council, or you look at WTO, or you look at WHO, even the United States have moved out. And, you know, all these institutions have not been very effective. So obviously you have to look at those situations and then try to see that, you know, there are other countries in which, I mean, India is, in fact, despite all the, what problem we have with China, but, you know, with countries, not just only with Russia, even with the West, I mean, India is reasonably having good relations now, more than 35 strategic partnerships. So you have to see where interests lie. At the same time, there are also certain principles. So I think this is the way India is looking at the situation.
Now, the Chinese policy is sometimes described as one of tactical expediency, when China will forge certain agreements, violate some parts, and try to sort of cover it up with reassurances at the high level. Do you think there's any difference in how China relates to its various partners and which agreements it chooses to uphold perfectly or, let's say, forego?
This is what, in fact, is happening because, you know, many of the agreements which India and China put in place, they agreed that at the border there'll be tranquility, peace, till the time we are able to resolve this issue. Now, that continued for quite some time, at least 20 years plus. But suddenly, some of those things, India feel that they were violated by China. China will have its own explanation. But the fact of the matter was that, and fact of the matter still is, that for a couple of years, relations between India and China has not been normal. And we have to bring it back to the normalcy.
But that raises a question of what is normal, because, I mean...
Normal means that you have certain issues, because, you know, both the countries are growing. Both the countries are growing at the same place. So there are bound to be tensions. So in certain areas in which both of them will be cooperating, like in trade, in investment, in technology...
And which you're already doing.
Which we are doing. And we can do even more. Then there are also areas where there's going to be certain competition because both of them are also growing. They would be looking for markets. They would be looking for different investment. They would be also looking for certain influence. So there is also going to be, in that sense, competition. But there are also, but it should not really become conflict. So this is what, so it means India-China relation, they look into 3-4 C's kind of thing, competition, cooperation, conflict. So this is what has been the case for quite some time. So sometimes you have more cooperation, less conflict. Sometimes, like in the last phase, you have slightly more conflicting issues, but then the cooperation is less. But, this is how you have to manage those relations.
Interesting. You brought up the American formula of 3C. They are often cited in relation to China. I wonder if you think that India, or perhaps even Russia to some extent, derive any indirect benefit from... the increased attention that the United States is now paying to China. And do you think it changed the way China behaves itself, both in the region and in the world?
Well, I mean, obviously, other countries would like to take advantage. I mean, United States, as you have mentioned, if there is a certain tension between India and China, since they also have their issues with China, they would like to use this this particular tension to their advantage. At the same time, since India has issues with China for the last few years, so the kind of tensions which is building between the United States and China, India also would like to take advantage from that tension.
Which is fair, yeah.
At the same time, this is also happening that the kind of problems you have now with the West, both with Europe and with the United States and sanctions, this has brought China and Russia together, which is creating certain worries in India that if Russia becomes too closer to China, which is not really very good for us in the long run, because, you know, we feel that Russia should be playing much more independent role, bigger role in the global affair. So, you know, this is how things have been happening, which every country looking at their own interest is trying to use that particular situation. But we are very careful that we should not be used by others, you know, in this kind of situation. So we try to resolve things bilaterally with China.
And India has also sought to mitigate this Chinese factor by developing ties with the West. I think the previous administrations have been courting New Delhi quite extensively. I would even say that India enjoyed very special treatment for quite some time. Do you think that will continue under the Trump administration?
Well, you know, at this point of time, I think there are so many interests between India and United States which have converged, and rise of assertive China is also one of those reasons that both of them come together, because it's very difficult for one independent country to kind of rebalance China. Nobody can stop the rise of China. I mean, you know, that's an independent factor. But at least you try to rebalance that, you know, your interests are not really harmed by that rise. So both are trying to work on CERT. That's why you have the quadrilateral security arrangement. Then you also have the Indo-Pacific economic framework. Then you also have within the Indo-Pacific economic framework different things you are talking. So all those things are basically trying to rebalance certain things working with the United States. Yes.
Well, but does the United States commit to all those formats? Because, I mean, judging from the first moves of the Trump administration and the, some controversy within that administration, it looks like perhaps the relationship with India may also change, because I heard that there are some major disputes over the H-1B visas, 70% of which go to highly skilled workers who happen to be mostly Indians in the past. If that issue is changed, do you think it will affect the emotional temperature between the two
countries? No, I mean, you know, I mean, Trump was there also earlier for 5 years. This is one area in which I think one can say there are slight frictions. There are certain interests. I mean, it's not just only this. I mean, there could be tariffs, or earlier when Trump earlier also he imposed certain tariffs on India. But I think there are, I think Indian policymakers are quite confident that they'll be able to manage those affairs. One, I mean, either you negotiate with them on certain issues, or you give certain give and take that, you know, if on certain specific products or certain other things which are of interest to United States, you might just allow those things to happen. But those are not going to affect fundamentally, I would say, India-United States relations. Because a certain interest at this point of time, they are converging. And Indian Foreign Minister mentioned that before Trump took over, that many countries in the world are worried from Trump's coming to the United States, but India is not one of them.
Now, there's an old saying in political circles that when the United States sneezes, the world catches a cold. And if you take that metaphor a little bit further, I think the United States right now is not just sneezing. It's, you know, in a very high fever with some erratic convulsions. But you're saying that the Indians are not worried. How is India trying to sort of protect itself from the erratic nation of that administration, or you don't believe perhaps that it's erratic?
No, I mean, it's unpredictable. I mean, that's quite true. But from the past experience, that there could be certain issues in which you could resolve. And then there is also a factor, there is also good personal chemistry between Prime Minister Modi and President Trump. I mean, things can go wrong somewhere. I mean, nobody can be totally 100% sure about this, but they are not really that worried as like the Europeans are worried about Trump administration and many others perhaps. Yeah.
Good, I see. Well, Professor, we have to take a very short break right now, but we will be back in just a few moments. Stay tuned.
There's no end in sight over how you're going to continue to destroy the Earth.
It's the case of the madness of the people.
I tried to go to the gym, but I'm certainly not ready to fight Russia.
This is all so absurd.
This is third world lunacy. Brainwashing.
As Ursula von der Leyen likes to say, we have the tools.
Why don't we just start with stability and business deals?
What planet are we living on, man?
We have very good propaganda in our press here in Europe.
I think we don't know the aftermath.
Anytime that you're not allowed to ask questions, you should ask all of the questions.
The more questions asked, the better the answers will be.
Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Gulshan Sachdeva, a professor at Jawaharlal Nehru University in New Delhi. Professor, before the break, we discussed many changes that are now happening in geopolitics, but in his recent book, the Indian External Affairs Minister, Jay Shankar, wrote that the India-Russia relationship is, quote, subject of attention not because it has changed, but because it has not. What do you think allowed for this non-change, given that the two countries internally have transformed a great deal?
Well, in fact, earlier also he mentioned a couple of times that the world has changed, Russia has changed, India has changed, but India-Russia relations continue to be a stable factor in international relations. As you know, India's relations with the Soviet Union are very strong. Even after the Soviet breakup, when our trade relations almost, finished, because, Soviet Union used to be India's number one trading partner under specific trading arrangement which we had. In the 90s, the whole trade disappeared. But we were able to put together certain institutional mechanism after this, that at least the political and strategic relations, they became more or less close. Then defense continued to be a very important area because most of the Indian platforms continued to be Russian. Then India was also able to find certain areas, particularly nuclear, energy, space, where still, cooperation was built. But the private sector thing simply didn't work because Russia was looking more towards the West. India, things changed. India was also looking for new markets. People, those who were operating in the Russian market earlier or in the Soviet market, those things simply didn't exist then. But the trust factor which was built over decades between India and Russia, that continued.
Can I ask you about that? Because clearly in the modern day geopolitics, there is a very huge shortage, I would even say lack of trust. The countries have moved away from that paradigm. And yet, I think the relationship between India and China demonstrates that, it pays off to try to preserve it, even when commercial ties are not burgeoning. What do you think this stability allows the two countries? Why is it worthwhile to try to cultivate it in your relationship?
Because it was, very deep-rooted. It's not just only about between just few interests. It was not just only about few political leaders or few political parties. When Prime Minister, when Narendra Modi became India's first Prime Minister in 2014, he was never there in the Union government. He was the state leader. And at that time, it was expected that, he may not really be very effective foreign policy player. And I remember, he had first meeting with President Putin and somebody asked him about India-Russia relations. And, naturally, his first reaction was that if you ask anybody in India, even a child, who is your best friend? And the answer would be Russia. So, it's deep-rooted, that kind of relationship where it's not just only defense forces, it's not just only about the political leaders. At a general mass level, people think that Russia is our friend. And that perhaps works with all, all policymakers as well. So they feel that whenever there was a critical movement in India's history, whether it was 1971, India, in the Bangladesh, the India-Pakistan situation, or later on, whenever the issue of Jammu and Kashmir was raised at the United Nations, or any critical time when India needed somebody at the United Nations Security Council or any other international forum, Russia stood with India. So similarly, the same situation when, happened during the Ukraine crisis. The sentiment that, yes, there might be certain issues there, but, here there is a friend which is at a certain problem. And, it was very difficult for, I think, the Western countries to understand, even digest. And they were quite disappointed.
Perhaps because they do not develop relationship in such a fashion, because as you pointed out, it takes time, years, decades to actually cultivate and sometimes forego immediate interest in order to, you know, show respect to the connections that you forced. And interestingly enough, you know, you mentioned some difficult times in Russia's history, in Russia's recent history, and that relationship paid off because it allowed Russia to reorient its oil exports very swiftly to India's also great benefit. If I'm not mistaken, Russia now accounts for 40% of India's oil imports compared to less than one before the war. Now, what's interesting about it is that a lot of this oil, as far as I understand, gets refined in India and then being sold to the European Union. And this is the question I have for you. How do you understand this European positioning, sort of sending these energy sources circulating around the entire continent and losing what's important, added value in the process? Because a lot of those profits, they used to be earned by the Europeans themselves, but now they're ready to pay exorbitant prices for the same sources of energy, but with...
Well, I think this is the... I mean, you know, when, you know, the Ukraine war started, obviously they had certain issues and they still believe, continue to have those issues. And then they decided... that they have to move away from the Russian energy sources. And that
they didn't.
Well, in a sense, I mean, the political decision was taken. So slowly and slowly they started moving away, and that created a situation in which, you know, Russia also have to, because Russia continued to be a major producer and exporter of energy. So if Europeans are not buying, so Russia obviously have to find new markets. So China was another market, India was another market. But only thing was, there were other problems. How do you really... suddenly create that linkages, and the tariff would be higher because India is also closer to other energy sources in the Middle East. So maybe the factor of the freight would be added into this. But then you have all the discounted price, etc. So it means certain mechanism, and there was a political will to do certain thing. They were able to do it. And then there was also unprecedented sanctions against Russia. So somehow policymakers in both the countries and agencies in both the countries, they have been also able to work out certain mechanism that payments are made. And still things are continuing. Of course, it may not be very easy, I can understand. It may be a very complicated situation. But, you know, it has been on. So it means there is a political will. And the Europeans, the question you ask, they have moved away. But, you know, India played in that sense very positive role even for the Europeans and for the global market. Because if the Russian oil was not there in the global market, there'll be much more volatility. There'll be much more, the price would have been much higher, and the consumers in Europe also would have paid much higher price than what actually they are getting now. So in a sense, India, they might criticize India in a sense that, you know, India is still buying you know, oil from Russia.
But they buy in the form of oil products.
Stabilize the global energy market, and they themselves are buying that. In that sense, you know, India played a very important stabilizing role, I would say.
I think also in some strange sense, it allowed for a sort of a just distribution of economic activity, because Europe, at least before the kinetic phase of this conflict, accumulated a lot of added value benefits, and now you know, they're being shifted to other countries like India, and I suppose this may trickle down from the energy sector to other industries as well, because you need energy in order to develop your economies. Now, do you think this situation is permanent? Do you think the Europeans forever will sort of stay at this kind of arrangement, or is there a potential for turnaround?
Well, there's a potential of everything, you know, but at the moment looks like that for the next couple of years, things are going to be the way things are happening, because even if, for argument's sake, you know, things are resolved, you know, at the Ukraine case. But, you know, I mean, the sanctions, etc., might continue for some more time. Similarly, Europeans may also... politically, they have decided there is also now pressure from the United States, because United States itself is becoming a major energy producer. So they would like, I mean, Europeans to buy more energy from the United States than from Russia. And in the process in the last 2 years, new linkages also been created. So, you know, situation has changed. So it may not be exactly the same situation, say, after 2 years, after, even if things are normalized. And in the process, there is more in processing capacities in India. There's a new routes would be created. New connectivity channels would be created now because of the volumes are there. So many of those corridors which India and Russia have been talking for years, some of things may materialize because now the trade volumes are there. I mean, things are uncertain, but this has also given some new opportunities for India and Russia to work together in many new areas as well.
Your minister, foreign affairs minister, described India's strategy as engaging with America, managing relations with China, strengthening ties with Europe, reassuring Russia, bringing Japan into play, drawing in our neighbors, extending our regional influence, and expanding our traditional basis of support. That's a very ambitious and very multifaceted plan. What do you think is its weakest or perhaps most tenuous point?
No, I don't think anything weakest here in the sense, I mean...
Well, you want all at all times, but it's not possible.
No, but I don't see any contradiction here in a sense. I mean, what you can see that you, first thing is that, you know, I mean, some people said that India is going from non-alignment to multi-alignment. But I think it's not even alignment, it's multi-engagement. Because alignment, India is not aligning with anybody. It's not with any country because India cannot be, even if you're working in the Indo-Pacific with the United States, India is not an ally. Unlike other partners, you know, whether Japan or Australia and other those who come with the United States anyway, whether there is something in Indo-Pacific or not. But India will not. But there are certain interests. And because of tensions with China, it particularly these kind of narrative, these kind of things do work. So this has been working. At the same time, India is also playing a very important role now within the Global South, because Global South today is not what it used to be. It's not a bunch of few developing countries. Within Global South, there are heavyweights, politically, economically, strategically. And you look at any numbers, whether you look at trade, you look at investment, you look at many other, even in services, in technology, the Global South countries are becoming important. So India can work with the neighbors, with the Global South, and also with other players. So it's ambitious, but yes, I mean, so far, it has worked pretty okay.
Mm. Now, let me ask you one last question, because in this great list of objectives, the minister didn't mention Pakistan by name, and there is also nothing about managing historical enmities. How do you see it developing? Do you think this issue will be addressed primarily on a bilateral basis, or has it now become a sort of a small thing within a much broader puzzle?
Well, I mean, I think if India has any ambition to be an important player within Asia and at the global level, so you cannot really play very important role or that ambitious role if you do not really resolve your issues within your neighborhood. So ultimately, India has to find ways to work, particularly the mention in the Pakistan. But so far, I think situation has not really reached that place. It may not really affect your, you know, other kind of relations with others. The importance of Pakistan within the larger scheme of things may not be that important. But I think for your larger role, ambition, you have to find certain things also within your neighborhood. And it has to be done bilaterally. That has been the policy throughout.
Mm-hmm. Well, Professor, we have to leave it there. It's been a great pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you. Pleasure talking to you.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart.